And welcome to Books Unbound, the podcast where we unbind books to get to their hearts with your hosts, me, Raylene, and...
me, it's Ariel.
Oh, hey. What's up? So this week, we are here with a bunch of recommendations once again. We've got some fun ones, some interesting picks. I'm pretty excited to see what you pick for some of these.
Yeah.
How's it going, man?
You know what?
Before we jump in.
I'm doing okay. I'm in the midst of a big move, and I'm selling a lot of stuff. And relevant to the podcast, I sold a bunch of my books. And actually, Raylene, I texted you, as you know. I sent you a photo of all most of the books that I was getting rid of. And I was like, do you want any of these? And you replied back saying that you were proud of me for the amount of books that I'd gotten rid of. So
yeah, it was nice because for a long time, like I've come over to your house multiple times. And I always, of course, I always look at your books. And sometimes I'm just like, why does she still have that? Why does she have that? She's never going to read that. And I'm a person who likes to get rid of stuff like a lot. So I always do that. But you like to hang on to your things, which is great. Yeah. I'm always like, she's not going to read that book. I just know it. And then I saw in your unhaul that you were getting rid of some of those books. And I was like, good.
I feel amazing. Like my life has very slowly gone through the Marie Kondo method. Where you know how like Marie Kondo says, start with like clinical things like papers. Like it's easy to get rid of papers. So go through, get rid of the papers you don't need. Keep the only the essential papers that you really need. And then move on to clothes. And then move on to blah, blah, blah. She's like, so it goes from the least emotional to the most emotional. And like when I was... how old would I have been? I don't know. When I was like 21, I like got rid of all of my Converse shoes.
Right.
I had like 30, 40 pairs of Converse shoes because I had like collected them since I was 14. It was the only thing I ever asked for. It was books and Converse for my birthday, for Christmas, for anything. I would get Converse. And but then eventually I got to this point where I was like, you know what? I always wear the same four pairs and I'm going to get rid of the rest. And then since that, it kind of cracked a slight opening to me getting rid of stuff. And then I'm like, now I'm really good at only keeping the shoes that I really like. And now I'm really good at only keeping the clothes that I really like. And now I feel like I've crossed that boundary into books where I'm like more able to get rid of books. But yeah, I'm hoping I will do another little purge and like... it's just that books are so heavy too. You're like,
it's true.
Can I really justify carrying this around the country when they're so freaking heavy and I could just borrow them from the library? I gotta keep the ones that I think will like they and I actually made a whole video about this, so the video is probably up by the time this episode comes out, hopefully, unless I'm like so behind. But but it's I talk a lot about how I just wanted to keep the books that either I really cared about or I still really wanted to read, like want to read soon, like want to read in the next kind of year, except my one exception is classics, because like classics I'm like happy to hold on to for
of course, because you can read them whenever.
Yeah, exactly.
The other books are kind of more trendy. Sometimes you lose interest if you haven't read them in 5 years, which happened to me a lot, which is a lot of the books I've bought and then gotten rid of. And it feels stupid when you do that because it's like, oh, I bought this brand new and hardcover and now I don't care about it.
And now so, I'm going to get like $2 for it.
Exactly. It's tragic. Especially the longer you wait, the less interested the bookstores are going to be in your books, you know?
Totally. Ugh. 100%. Well... that's just life. But yes, that is my big thing right now. I'm trying to stay on top of everything, but I do find it very hard to like stay on top of my YouTube channel and the podcast and the other 80 million things I have going on and do this giant move. But I just keep thinking about December. I'm like, by Christmas, I will be settled in somewhere and it will all be okay.
Exactly. It'll be fine in a couple of months.
Exactly. How about you? Anything interesting going on over there?
No. Everything's pretty status quo in my life. Nothing crazy's going on. Everything's the same. So
I wouldn't mind a little status quo right now, honestly. That would be nice. But it will. December. Christmas. I'm like, in my mind, Christmas is going to be great.
It'll be great. Well, thanks for the update. Time to jump in, everybody. We've got some fun recommendations. Let's see. What's the first one? Okay, the first one is one that I picked, so I will read it. So this comes from Ayla, and she says, hi guys, first things first, I love your podcast. Oh, thanks. I always love it when they start like that. I recently started reading graphic novels, and I was wondering if you knew any good novel to graphic novel adaptations. The last one I read was The Handmaid's Tale, art by Renee Nault, and I loved it. If you could recommend anything similar, that would be great. Lots of love from Germany. Oh, that's fun. I also love hearing where you guys are from. I say that every time, but it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
What did you pick for this one?
Well, I picked two, and they're not going to be a surprise to anyone, but they're both genuinely really love them. So the first one is Anne of Green Gables, illustrated by Brenna Thumler. I am such a big Brenna Thumler fan at this point. Nobody's surprised that I mentioned this one, but I'm also a massive Anne of Green Gables fan now because of the show, because of this graphic novel. And this is a beautifully illustrated and beautifully adapted version of the story. I've got to look up, actually, who, I forget. Whenever I talk about that book, I always talk about Brenna Thumler. But obviously there's an author there too, Ariel. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Get your act together. Tunnel vision. I have tunnel vision. It's Mariah Marsden is the person who did the adaptation. And she did a wonderful job.
Cool.
So it's a really beautiful book. And it made me love the story so much that A, I felt very emotional. And B, I then immediately went and watched the entire N with an E show.
Right.
So
she got obsessed.
I got obsessed. So I really recommend this book. One of my favorite things I've read this year. I really, really loved it. The other one I wanted to mention is one that I have talked about on the podcast before, but I haven't mentioned in a while. And it is the Animal Farm graphic novel by Odier. Or Odier. It's probably Odier, but like both of those, I don't know. It's O-D-Y-R. How would you pronounce that?
Odier. Odier. I don't know. I feel like it's just can't be Odier, pronounced in our accents.
Yeah, with a British accent. So this is a wonderful, I want to say it's watercolor, but maybe it's not, and I'm just making stuff up.
Mm.
Animal Farm. Odier. Let's see here. Let's see if anywhere tells me whether it's, yeah, I don't know. For some reason I thought he just went by his last name. I think he does just go by his last name. But anyway, it is, it's so beautiful. So it has this kind of muddy feeling, which is why it makes me think of watercolor,
yeah.
But maybe it's not. But it has this kind of muddy, earthy, watery tone to it. The illustrations are so gorgeous and the adaptation is so, so good. As a person whose favorite book of all time is Animal
yes.
Farm, I was very scared. I was, you know, I was excited, but I was also very nervous that it wouldn't be a good adaptation. But I thought it was a wonderful adaptation. And I really thought that if somebody read Animal Farm a long time ago and they didn't really like it, or if they don't really remember it, or if they're like just nervous about reading a classic or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I would gladly give them this version of Animal Farm, because seeing some of the things like illustrated. Because, okay, with Anne of Green Gables, you can very easily imagine a little girl on a farm,
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. Like, that's all very easy to imagine. But with Animal Farm, you've got talking pigs. You got pigs wearing little suits. It's like, what the hell's going on here, right? And so when you actually see it illustrated, it kind of, it's freaky. It's strange.
Yeah, it's odd.
It's stressful. It's odd. But it also adds a lot of power to it. Because you see, like, them all working together and everything. So it's really beautifully done. I think it was really, really powerfully made. And I super recommend it. And, yeah, it really impressed me. Thank goodness. So those are my two, and I really highly recommend both of them.
Fantastic. Ooh. I also
cool that I read both of those this year.
Oh, that's true. Those are more recent ones for you.
Yeah.
Well, I picked a couple of weird ones. One is one that I haven't read the graphic novel adaptation of. I've read the novel, and another one is manga. So I'll start with the one I have read, and that is All You Need Is Kill by Ryosuke Takeuchi. This was originally a novel by Hiroshi Sakurazaka,
mm-hmm.
and this, so yeah, it was a novel, and then it was adapted into manga, and this was also the book that was adapted into the movie Edge of Tomorrow, starring Tom Cruise. So it's super random. It's gone through a lot. But this manga adaptation is great. I haven't read the original novel. I want to, but I just haven't ever gotten my hands on it because it's like an uncommon Japanese book, as far as I can tell. But it was adapted into this manga, and the art was actually done by Takashi Obata, who did the art for Death Note.
Right.
So it's a very, very well done manga. And if anybody has seen the movie Edge of Tomorrow, you kind of will know what this is about. But it's about people who are in war exactly with aliens, kind of. And the main character gets stuck in a time loop. Like, he keeps going into battle and then dying. And then he has to come back and keep trying to do the same battle over and over again. So it's one of those crazy time loop stories. But in my opinion, never got to be too repetitive, which is often my problem with stories like this, because he's always like training and trying to do better and trying to discover what he can do to like get out of the time loop. And so it's very engaging and interesting. So I really, really like that one. And obviously the art is amazing, because if you've read Death Note, like, the art is just, whoa, so good. So I highly recommend this one if you want something manga-y. And the other one that I'm going to just give a shout out, because I haven't read this technically, but it's the Kindred graphic novel by Octavia E. Butler. Okay. The illustrations were done by John Jennings, and it was adapted by Damian Duffy. So this is one that has been on my radar since it came out. I just haven't read the graphic novel, but the novel itself is so good, and I feel like it would be really well adapted into a graphic novel, because having the visual aspect would probably make it even more powerful than it is. And this is another sci-fi one. So I thought, if you're interested in The Handmaid's Tale and kind of modern classic sci-fi, this could also potentially be of interest. It is involves time travel, which I guess my time loop one also had time travel. I really like time travel. So yeah, I can't say I recommend this one, but the book itself is great. So I'm sure the graphic novel would be cool as well.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I think we nailed it. I think we gave a couple of good ones, and we
good options. Two,
so there's a lot of options.
Lots of classics in there, which is good.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, I'm going to go to this one from Emily. So Emily says, "Hello, Raylene and Ariel. I was wondering if you had any recommendations for a book with a really strong mentor-mentee relationship, to the point where the mentor takes on an almost parental or older sibling-like role. Strong character development between the two characters is a must, and heartfelt and or gut-wrenching moments are lovely as well. I would love for it to be in either a fantasy setting or a realistic fiction setting." I know, polar opposite. "And bonus points if the protagonist is young adult age, early 20s-ish, since many of these stories focus on younger teens. Thank you so much. Your podcast has been an absolute godsend during quarantine."
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you so much, Emily. Well, Raylene, what did you pick?
Okay, so this one, I actually picked a book. I have read this, obviously, but it's my boyfriend's favorite series. So he was like, "You have to pick this one," because I was asking him for help with this. And it's perfect because it's fantasy, and I think it works great. And that is The Way of Shadows by Brent Weeks. This is a trilogy on the Night Angel trilogy. I've only read the first two, but this is great. So the main character is this guy named Azoth, or Azoth. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it, but he is really young when the story starts out, but then he has a really rough childhood. It's kind of similar to The Name of the Wind, in that like it starts with an orphaned young person who's just down on their luck, and he gets recruited by this guy named Durzo Blint, who is this, he basically, the book is all about assassins who use magic.
Okay.
So he gets recruited by this guy named Durzo, who is, as they call them, a wet boy. I don't know why he chose that name, but that's the name for assassins who use magic in this world.
Okay.
And so he gets taken under Durzo's wing, and Durzo teaches him everything he knows about using magic and assassination and stuff like that. And so they do form this really close bond, and Durzo becomes like a dad to him, essentially. And then the story like goes through as he grows up. So he's kind of, I think he's in his early 20s, like when the story is really established. And then it's a trilogy, so obviously there's lots more story where that came from. But yeah, this was a really good one. Really fast-paced, funny kind of fantasy. So if you want something that's like dark but also hilarious, this is a good series to get into.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah.
I'm proud of us. We're nailing this so far. Well, I'm excited about the one that I picked, because it is one that I've talked about on the podcast before. But, and I sort of talked about this element of it, but not in such specific detail. Mm. So I wanted to really recommend Albatross, which I've mentioned, obviously, like I said, quite a few times before. Who is the book by again? Albatross.
Terry Fallis.
Terry Fallis. Yes. Thank you. Okay. So Albatross is about a young boy who, well, he's like 15 or something. And he is in high school and he gets a new gym teacher. And his new gym teacher was reading this magazine, like, you know, scientific journal or something. And there's this wacky scientist who has this idea that if you measure the human body with these very particular measurements, like nose to belly button, shoulder to shoulder, blah, 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 and you put it through his little system, it will show you if a person is perfectly fit for a sport or not. And it gives you, like, a percentage. And it's like, okay, you, like, Raylene, you get measured. And they're like, you have a 76% for tennis and an 88% for golf and a 52% for diving, etc., right?
Yeah.
So the teacher just thinks it would be fun to measure her students and see if any of them would be, like, world-class athletes. Mm-hmm. So she measures our main character and realizes that he gets, like, a 97% in golf. And they're both like, what does that even mean? And so she's like, I don't know, let's go try play golf. And so they go, and he's amazing. And she's shocked to her core because, of course, because it's a book, she used to be a golfing pro, but had to quit because of an injury. But secondly, because he truly has never played golf before, but he's amazing. He just has so much natural ability. And the thing is, it's not really about him being good or him liking golf. He really hates golf, but it's just about how his body happens to be very good at it.
Yeah.
So that's what the story is about. I really love this story. I know I talked about it a lot when I first read it because it blew me away. I really, really enjoyed it. But one of my favorite elements about the book is this relationship between that teacher and our main character. Mm-hmm. So like I just explained, that's how their relationship starts. But as they decide to try and nurture his golfing ability, she is his coach. And as he gets older and older, because the book takes place over, like, I want to say 10 years, maybe 15 years, maybe more like 10, I forget. But, like, as all That's this cool. time passes, she's still there. And he goes through periods where he, like, goes to college far away, so he doesn't see her as much. But when he gets invited to, like, really big tournaments, he invites her to be his caddy and stuff like that. So she remains an important character in his life and someone that he really loves. And there is some very emotional moments that they share that really bring them together. So I really think that, Emily, this book will have everything you want. It has an almost parental role. It has a strong character development between the two characters. It's in a realistic fiction setting. The protagonist is basically in their 20s for most of the book. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it has that strong mentor-mentee relationship. I just love this book. And now that I've talked about it so much, I want to reread it.
Yeah, I bought it because of you, as you know. I sent you a picture of it when I picked it up because I was like, you know what? I need to read this book. Yes. It just sounds like weird and good.
Maybe that's the one you should read next to be a little happier.
That's a great idea. Yeah, the last episode we were talking about how I'm really sad because of the books I've been reading.
Yeah, so you've been reading some pretty intense books.
Yeah, maybe that'll break it up a little.
Well, again, I think we nailed it. I'm not to pat ourselves on the back here, but sometimes we're a disaster, and this week we're doing pretty good so far.
It's true. And for the next one, I have a pretty good one too.
Oh, well, I'm sure you do. What is it? Let's go.
Well, this next one that I picked comes from Ashley, and she says, "Hello, I find myself really enjoying the stories you both have associated with your books. For example, Ariel and her dad's mission to get a John Green book or get a signature in the Fault in Our Stars, how he went on a mission for you." So I was wondering if you had any books that just remind you of good memory or of obtaining it or reading it. So I'm just going to jump into my story because it's great. It's pretty good in my opinion. So it's kind of a long story. Not really, but anyways.
I'm ready for the tale.
So in 2012, I found out from some friends that live in the town next to my town that Daniel Radcliffe was in town. He was filming a movie. And I was like, dear Lord, this is the biggest news of my entire life.
Love
and
it.
So my other friend and I went on a mission to find him. We found out that he might be at this specific restaurant or he might be at this hotel. And we basically just like kind of wandered around the town hoping to see, you know, film crews.
Yeah.
And turns out he was at the restaurant. And so my friend and I, she has these cardboard cutouts of like Harry Potter and Ron.
Yeah.
And she was like, let's bring them. And I was like, sure, why not? So we brought them and we just stood across the street from the restaurant, holding these cardboard cutouts. And it's like, it was raining, you know, it wasn't the greatest day. And it was December. I remember that. I think it was December 12th, 2012. Anyway, and it was somewhere around there. And so we were just standing across the street in the rain holding these cardboard cutouts, just kind of, you know, we didn't want to be too obtrusive. We didn't want to be annoying people. And so we were just standing there. And then this guy walks across the street and comes up to us. And he was like, oh, hey, what's up? Like, he's this British guy. And he's like, I'm Daniel's assistant. Like, can I help you guys with something? And we were like, oh, we just wanted to say hi, whatever. And so he was like, okay, sure. Like, do you want to get something signed? And we were like, oh, yes, please. And so my friend gives him the Harry Potter cutout. And
oh my God.
He takes it. And I just give him one of my books. And so then he brings them back signed. And we were like, holy shit, this is incredible. And he's like, do you want to meet Dan? And we were like, yeah. So whatever. Long story short, we met Daniel Radcliffe. But he was filming the movie Horns. That is where the story takes place in the year of 2012. So I had never heard of Horns before this encounter.
Yeah.
But when we met Daniel Radcliffe, he had horns on his head. So I was like, well, I've got to read this book.
So funny.
And so I went on a mission to find the book Horns, which is by Joe Hill. And I have it right here, you see. I brought it. But the funny thing is, this book, it was so not popular. It wasn't new. It was just this random book by basically a random guy. Yes, he's Stephen King's son, but like nobody really talked about Joe Hill that I was aware of anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I wanted to find the book, but it was nowhere. Like, I couldn't find it in any used bookstores close to me. I couldn't find it at Chapters. So I looked online and they had this $5 like scratch and dent copy at a different Indigo, an hour and a half from where I live. Whoa. And so I was like, Mom, please, like, I need this book. I have to get this book because I met Daniel Radcliffe when he was dressed up like the character. Like, I just have to. And so she drove me for like an hour and a half to this bookstore and I bought it. And so it's like not in great condition because it was discounted to $5. It's kind of falling apart a little, but I love it. It's just like this weird old hardcover that has like so many memories attached to it. And then as soon as I bought it, like, I remember reading it and I was working in the same town where I met Daniel Radcliffe at the time. So it just like has all these memories associated with that time in my life and like the memory of the like what happened there. And it was just like, just great. So that's my story.
I love that story. So thanks. What book did he sign?
He signed my Deathly Hallows, a copy of my Deathly Hallows that I have. Because that's the funny thing is I didn't have this book.
So that's like, what I figured.
I couldn't get him to sign the book that actually was relevant at the moment, but I brought my Deathly Hallows copy with me because I was like, this is like the most important book to me at that time because that was when the Deathly Hallows movies were coming out. It was 2011 and 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the book I had read like 5 times in those years. So yeah, I have a random Harry Potter book signed by Daniel Radcliffe.
I love that
also
story so
part
much.
Part of the story.
That's beautiful. Well, I can tell a really quick Deathly Hallows story.
Please.
And then I've got my, I'll tell another one. I honestly, I couldn't decide what book to tell a story about, but hearing yours, I will base all of mine off of yours. So quickly, my Deathly Hallows story is just that whenever anybody comes to look at my shelves, everyone notices that my 7th Harry Potter book is the American hardcover edition, and the first 6 are the Canadian/British paperback editions. And everyone's like, what the hell happened? And I'm like, I don't know. Because what happened was I was about to finish the 6th book, or I had finished it, I don't remember. And I said to my dad, Dad, I just finished the 6th book. I desperately need the 7th book. And it had just come out or had been out for a little while. And I was like, please, please, please buy me the 7th book when you go out today. And he was like, yeah, okay, don't worry, I'll get it. And I was like, sick. So he goes out and he comes back and he hands me this monstrously sized 7th book. And I was like, how does a thing like this even occur? But I was really grateful. So I didn't say anything, right?
Yeah.
I didn't bring it up, or I wasn't like, I'm not going to be like a horrible person and be like, oh, it doesn't match my editions. It doesn't matter. It's the same story. It's all fine. So I was like, this is great. And I read it. And I remember reading it in my parents' room, kind of in one sitting on a beanbag chair, and mm-hmm. just absolutely adoring the book and having a great time with it. But it has always been this mystery to me how he even got an American edition. So last month, I literally was like, you know what? It has been, I don't know, 15 years or whatever. I need to know what happened. So I marched up to my dad's room. My mom and my dad were just, you know, lying in bed watching a show or something. And I was like, I must get to the bottom of a mystery. And he was like, okay. And I was like, you bought me this book. And he was like, yeah, I remember that. And I'm like, I get handed over. And I was like, how? He's like, what do you mean? And I was like, none of my other Harry, they don't sell these in Canada. Yeah. I was like, I don't know what happened. And he's like, oh, you know what I think happened? And I was like, what? He's like, you got me on one of the days when I decided to go down to the States to buy Pop-Tarts. So this is the thing about my dad. He loves the brown sugar Pop-Tarts that they don't sell in Canada. I don't know why they don't sell them. It's just not a flavor that we have insane. In Canada. Maybe we do now, but they didn't all growing up. And I still don't think we do. Anyway, so because we used to live in Kingston, Ontario, you could drive across the border in like an hour and you could go to this small town, Watertown. And so we would pretty often go just drive down into Watertown, go to Target, which we didn't have in Canada. We also had Target in Canada for 2 years and sadly left. And then we just like go to Target and go to certain stores that we didn't have here and then come back up. And so that's what he had done. He had just for that, he's like, I remember, when I got Pop-Tarts, I picked up your book. I got a couple other American things. And then I came back up and I was like, that makes so much sense. Because I was so confused.
Yeah,
so,
like, what are the chances that it just happened to be the one day he decided to go? Just, and he's like, oh, of course, I'll pick up the book while I'm here.
I know. It's just so funny. And, like, the thing is, I kind of like it because it's this giant epic conclusion. So it's kind of like form-fitting function where it's, like, this giant book.
It stands out from the rest.
Okay, well, that was my Harry Potter story. I will quickly now tell the one I was going to tell. I decided to tell my Michelle Obama story.
Ooh.
Because you told your meeting Daniel Radcliffe story. So I was like, I will share my meeting Michelle Obama story.
This is good. That makes me feel less bad about talking about it because I didn't want to seem like I was bragging or something. But it's the best story I had. I had nothing else.
No. It's a perfect story. You have inspired me. So here I was in my room. And I got an email, and the email said something along the lines of, hello, Ariel, this is so-and-so from YouTube Originals. We're thinking about launching a show called BookTube, which I still think is an insane name. They shouldn't have called it that. Like, why would you call the name of your show the name of a community? That's really strange.
It could have been something else.
Yeah, you can't speak for the whole community, but regardless. I just would like for the record everyone to know that I pushed back. I told them they shouldn't name it that and they did anyway, so it's not my fault. And they were like, this was, okay, let me just put you in context. Because I've heard a lot of people are like, Ariel had so much notice. I'm like, I had exactly 1 week's notice. Okay.
Oh my God.
So I got this email. It said, we're starting the show. We'd love for you to come down and be a part of it. You would get to interview Michelle Obama. The moderator is going to be John Green. And I was like, whoa, this is the coolest thing I have ever gotten an email about. This feels fake. This feels insanely weird. They didn't pay me. They gave me $400. So there's like also rumors going around that they're like, Ariel must have gotten paid thousands. I'm like, $400 to pay for my food. So, no. But the crazy thing was that I had already planned a trip to go to New York City for like a week or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was going to go somewhere else. I forget. So I basically this like completely was in the middle of my New York City trip. So I basically I remember it was the Sunday night of the Oscars. I got this email and I was going to be flying out on Wednesday. So this is how much official notice I had because the email had come in exactly 1 week before filming, but the contract didn't come till that Sunday night. So that Sunday night, I get another email that's like, please read over and sign this contract. And yeah. I very clearly remember like watching the Oscars while reading this contract so and funny. Being like, I don't know. I guess this sounds good. And signing it and sending it off. And yeah, so then I flew to New York because I had already paid for a trip to New York to visit friends and just hang out. And then, but what was hilarious was that whole trip, I don't even remember what the hell I did in New York other than read Becoming by Michelle Obama.
I love that.
Like, I was like, I don't want to be a fraud. I don't want to show up to this thing and not have actually read the book. So I was reading the book, but it's kind of a dense book. Like,
it's
I don't know
huge,
if
yeah.
It, but it takes a really long time to read it. And it was like kind of a slow book because it's not like action packed, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was kind of hard to read. And I'm like reading it as fast as I can. And then I got the audio book and it was just so hectic. And like I said, like, I signed the contract on a Sunday night and I was meeting Michelle Obama on a Thursday. So there was no time. Oh God, it was just crazy. And I've heard all these, like, it kind of does bother me. I've heard all these rumors where people are like, she got paid so much. She would have had weeks to prepare. And I'm like,
oh my God,
4 days, my
yeah,
friend.
You have no idea.
I bought the book on Monday, I think, or on Sunday. I was like, I think this is going to happen. Yeah, that's what happened. I was like, I told my brother, I was like, I'm pretty sure this is going to happen. When you go out to get groceries, can you please get me Becoming by Michelle Obama? And he was like, okay. Yeah. And so I got it on that Sunday. Anyways, then the day arrives. And it was very crazy, weird day. Like, I got to, for the first time, meet that, like, they didn't tell us who else. I'm sorry. I'm just remembering how much of an insane night this was. They did not tell me who else was on the thing. Like, I asked who the other people who were gonna speak with me were. And they were like, we can't confirm anything. We can't confirm. It was all top secret. And again, this is another thing where people are like, Ariel must have known who the panelists were. Did not. I did not know anything until the night before. The night before was when I saw who the other people were that were coming. And it was my friend Jesse and my friend Kat and stuff. And there were two other creators, though, also, who I just didn't know very well. Mm-hmm. And it's the night before. I remember 2 a.m. binging this audiobook, and I finally get an email from the team saying what our schedule was for the next following day.
Lord.
And it was like, you need to be ready to get picked up at 9 a.m. And I was like, oh. It was literally, it was 11, I think it was 11 p.m. when we got the notice. And then anyway, the next day, I woke up so early. I go in with my little book, just me and my book and my outfit. My outfit was a whole other story. They like asked me to send an outfit to be approved. And I was they didn't tell me that this was going to happen in advance. So I had gone to New York, so I didn't have my full wardrobe. So I just sent them what I thought was a nice Michelle Obama outfit. And they told me they didn't like it. And and I was like, well, I don't have time to buy clothes. What is your alternative? And it was just such a mess that I never got an answer. So I just wore that outfit, even though they told me not to.
Whoa, rebel.
And yeah, so I then went in and there was a lot of sitting around, a lot of like getting to talk to the other creators in the green room, and getting to talk to John Green, which is really cool. I'm a huge John Green fan, so that was in itself. It would have been just cool to just go and talk to John. That would have been amazing. And then we got put in the room where the thing was going to happen. And at this point, I think, yeah, they'd taken our books away and like had set them up in a different room for her to sign. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then... So we got locked into this room, and then while Secret Service went around, and like there was bomb smelling dogs, and they like did a whole sweep of the floor and the building, and then Michelle Obama came in and they locked her in with us. Like, it was very weird. Like, her security is so high,
of course,
that like weird things go. They're like, okay, you will now be locked into the room with Michelle Obama, and we're like, okay. Met her, she was lovely. We filmed, it was genuinely just 45 minutes. That was the whole thing. But it was super cool. It was it was their first episode filming this, so they got better at the format and mm-hmm. stuff. You know, our questions had to be pre-approved. This was another really frustrating part of the process. I sent in a bunch of questions that I thought were really interesting and really cool, and they did not approve any of them. Ugh. And so we basically just did like what they told us to do. And that's another rumor where people are like, why didn't they ask about these things? It's because we were not allowed. Michelle Obama's team wouldn't let us. And yeah, but it was really awesome. She complimented my nail polish. That was really cool. And then, and also this was back in before kind of the last political situation in the States. It's a couple years ago, but she asked me, she was like, how, what does everyone in Canada think? And I was like, how do I answer that question, Michelle Obama? We just want to help. We just want to help. All of that to say, Raylene, I then got to meet her. We got to, interview her for like 40 minutes, I think. It was all very, very fast because people, fancy, important people, this was not like a Daniel Radcliffe sitting in a diner situation. This was a Michelle Obama on a press tour situation.
Seriously,
so
very different.
It was very fast, but she was very nice. She was so friendly. I learned a lot during that whole thing. It was the first, like, that kind of scale of interview that I've ever gotten to do, and it was such a crazy experience. It was nice having friends there. It was nice, like, even though I'm not, like, friends with John Green, he comes from my part of the internet, yeah. You know what I mean? So it just felt nice to have him there, and everyone who organized it was super, super nice and friendly. And then at the end, they handed me my book back, and she had signed it, and so now I have a book signed by Michelle Obama.
Crazy.
And when I look at that book, I think of that entire saga. I think about not knowing anything until the last minute, about flying around to New York for no reason, and then I flew to Dallas where the
yeah, I remember you Austin. I remember you telling me about it, like, kind of when it was happening. You were like, so I'm going to Texas in a few days, and I was like, what?
And exactly.
It was just a crazy time.
It was all so last minute. My flights were booked last minute. I didn't know anything about who was going, what was happening, what questions I was allowed to ask. It was all so crazy. But it was a really special experience, and I'm so, like, excited that I got to do it, and grateful to all of, like, anyone who listens to this podcast or who has ever watched one of my videos. You know, those are the people who made that weird thing possible.
True.
For yours, it was your friend cutouts that made that possible.
Seriously, if it wasn't for those, I don't know if it would have happened, because we couldn't even see if Daniel Radcliffe was there when it was happening. Like, we just saw lights, and there was like a few people standing around, and so we were like, if we stand here long enough, maybe something will happen. That's and so then it funny. Did you know what else was funny actually about that story? What? Is because of the cutouts, like, we eventually walked across the street and saw Daniel Radcliffe while we were holding these, and he was like, you know what's really embarrassing? He's like, that cutout is taller than me.
Oh my god. That's
and it's
so
true.
Cute.
It was. So it was like he was standing right next to it, and he was shorter than the cutout of himself. And he was embarrassed.
That's really cute. I love that.
Yeah, it was nice.
That's really funny. Well, those are two of our main celebrity encounters / book stories.
Yeah. Thanks for asking one, Ashley. That was a strange but a fun one.
That was a really fun one. All right, my next one comes from Anthea, who asks, hi, pals. I used to love to read YA. Okay, it's so funny because all of these have very lovely started with, like, I love your podcast. And I thought this was going to say, I used to love your podcast.
Oh, God.
Hi, pals. I used to love to read YA and went through a phase lasting many years of devouring pretty much only YA literature and nothing else. Relatable. Mm-hmm. I think, Raylene,
that's
you
us.
And me.
Yep.
I am now significantly older and no longer relate to the youngness of this genre, but have found it hard to find a book or even a genre that makes me feel as excited to read as I used to when I was super into YA. Don't get me wrong, I still love to read it, but I'm looking, or I still like to read, I still love to read, but I'm looking for a book or type of book that will keep me gripped in a similar way to all the YA books of my days gone by, or of days gone by. Any genre is fine, but please, no graphic novels, as they're hard to find in my country. With love from Cyprus.
I was just gonna say, I love often people have to specify if they don't want graphic novels, because we just recommend them willy-nilly because we love them so much.
You're about to get a graphic novel.
So it's like, yeah, they have to preface it if they really don't want one. But
yeah, well, I really liked this recommendation, because, or request, I guess, because I really relate to it. And before we give our recommendations, I just kind of wanted to put a little thing out there and say that it took me a long time to find my footing after getting, after kind of leaving the YA bubble. Yeah. I didn't instantly know what to read. And I completely get what Anthea is saying when she's like, that the, like the whole genre of YA made her feel excited, because it is still kind of a relatively small thing, and so it feels a lot like you know all the players, you know all the authors, you know all the books that are coming out, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, like it feels like you get to just know that whole, it's almost like a fandom, and then when you kind of start to read those books and you no longer relate to them as much, etc., you're like, okay, what else do I read? And the only other thing is like adult fiction, and it's like
huge.
Adult fiction is just like most of the literature of the world, yeah. And so you're like, oh god. So yeah, it's about finding your niche, and the only way to do that is to experiment. So I want to say to Anthea, or to Anthea, and to anyone else who's like thinking this way or feeling this way, is just like, you've got to try a bunch of stuff, and you're gonna read stuff you don't like, but you're eventually gonna kind of find a path down to stuff that you really like.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Especially because like if you have specific genres within YA that you have really become attached to, just kind of find that, but in adult fiction. Yeah. Like if you love contemporary romance, like YA books, just look up adult contemporary romance. Or yes, if you love dystopian, look up adult sci-fi. Like there's the same genres within adult fiction as there is within young adult. Yes, they're just different books. 100%. So I think that's a good starting point potentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the one I picked for this is a fantasy adult book written by an author who also writes YA, which I think is a perfect transition. Smart. I've talked about this book before, but I just love it so much. And that's Vicious by V.E. Schwab, otherwise known as Victoria Schwab. She's great. I mean, I've said this before, I don't love all of her books. This is like the book of hers that I love the most, and the rest I'm kind of just lukewarm on. But this one is so, so good. It's a fantasy story, but also kind of, it's kind of like urban fantasy, I guess, because it takes place just within our normal world. It's about two guys who are best friends in college, and they are experimenting. Essentially, there's this phenomenon going on in the world called EOs, or extraordinaries, which is people who have superpowers. And they figure out that you can potentially gain superpowers by having a near-death experience. And so they experiment with that. They basically make themselves die only to bring themselves back. Kind of like Flatliners. It's kind of like that movie Flatliners, which is not very good, but a similar premise. And so they both come out with powers, and then they become mortal enemies. And so the whole story is about them also becoming adults. Like, it's of them like 15 years later, because Victor, one of the characters, goes to jail, and this is him after he comes out of jail. And he has this whole story, and there's like a fun kind of group of characters. Like, there's Victor, and then there's this young girl and a dog that join in, and then this other guy as well. So it's a fun kind of like group novel, but also like the stakes are pretty high, because it's like, you know, with all superhero type stuff, it's like the end of the world could happen. You
right,
know, like
of course.
There could be a giant war, and like this could blow up in everyone's face. And so it's very like big and grand, but like very easy to read, easy to understand. Like it's not high fantasy. It's not complicated in that way. And so it's kind of more like sci-fi fantasy, I guess, because it involves like superpowers, which is kind of more of a sci-fi thing. But I just love this book. It has a sequel too, which I didn't think was as good as the first one, but it adds on to the world quite a bit as well. So if you like this one, I mean, definitely give Vengeful a try too. But I think this is a great kind of in-between for people who are looking to get into non-YA books, but love YA, because it has that same like, you know, gripping quality where you don't want to put it down, and it's just very inventive and fun. So yeah. That's my recommendation.
I think that's a great recommendation. And I think that you're right that there are a few YA authors who also write adult books. Mm-hmm. And it's got a similar flavor. And so I think like I would really recommend Rainbow Rowell's books, Attachments and Landline, as books that if you liked Fangirl and Eleanor and Park, there's a very high likelihood that you're going to like those too.
Right.
So that, yeah, that's a really good call. The book that I picked is a little weird, but I was kind of trying to, not like, it's not weird at all, it's huge, it's a classic, but I decided to pick this one just because I'm remembering back when I was starting to have this kind of reading identity crisis, and I was like, I still like YA. I'll never stop reading YA. You know, like, I'm never going to be like, that's it, I quit YA, because that's stupid.
Yeah.
There's still, like, lots of amazing YA being published. I'm just not the target audience anymore. And very similar to what Anthea wrote, like, I don't know. I can't really read about teenagers and feel as emotional anymore. Like, back then, it felt like I was, I was reading about me. I was like, this is my story. Whereas now I'm like, wow, I was at that was so different to be me being a teenager was so different, and the problems that teenagers have are real and they're important, and I'm so glad that YA exists, but they're not the problems I have. I'm worrying about a mortgage. I'm literally worrying about a mortgage right now, like, that is, and so, like being stressed about whose locker you're next to, I'm like, nah, man,
this is not like, right.
No, it's not me anymore. But you know, I don't know. I get a little frustrated because I know a lot of people are like, ugh, you're turning your back on YA. I'm like, no, I'm so glad that YA exists. I'm a full supporter of YA. If you're having a rally about the importance of YA, I will go to that rally after the pandemic because I'm too scared of crowds. But right now, like, I will go to your Zoom rally because I completely agree, but I just don't enjoy reading them as much anymore. I don't relate to it. But anyway, so I was thinking back to that period of my life when I was like, ah, I didn't know what to read. And I was like, what was one book that I... that really, like, bridged that line? And for me, it was The Catcher in the Rye J.D. Salinger. So, okay, this was an important book for me to read at that time for a few reasons. Number one, I am actually convinced that this is a young adult novel, just like proto-YA, before we knew what YA was.
Totally.
Or before YA had its rules. It is about a young boy. How old is Holden?
I want to say like 15 or 16.
Yeah, I want to say like 14 or 15. So let's just say he's a teen, and he goes to a boarding school, and The Catcher in the Rye is kind of the story of one day in New York when he's walking around, making observations, thinking about life, and in many ways, actually, it's kind of exactly like what Anthea is talking about, where it's about this character who is no longer a young person, who is starting to feel more like a man, but also isn't yet an adult, and whose thoughts still are very innocent. And so it's kind of bridging this line between these two different parts of Holden. And this was a really interesting part when I was reading it and like figuring out what the heck the title was. Like, what is A Catcher in the Rye? And basically it's this dream, it's this vision that Holden has of like of what he wishes the future was. And it's these kids all running around and playing in these fields of rye, and like they're near a cliff, and Holden's job is to catch the kids that are about to fall off and throw them back into the rye. And so he's literally this like preserver of innocence, you know, like this person who's right in between those worlds, kind of Peter Pan-esque. So anyway, I think theme-wise it's perfect, but also it is very mature in its writing. It's, you know, it's a classic. It wasn't really written for teenagers, even though that's like the audience that it really exploded in. It's written so beautifully. It has great lines. It's very interesting. And so it kind of elevates a lot of those things that you might be looking for in YA. Kind of like takes you up to that next writing shelf. It's just such a great story. And once I read that, I was sort of like, okay, whoa, I can still read coming of age stories and stuff, but written from a more mature perspective.
Yeah, and I've said this before because we've done a couple of recommendations kind of similar to this. I think another great kind of entryway is adult fiction that's about young people.
Yes,
or about
exactly.
Teenagers.
Exactly. Totally.
You know, it's like the target audience is adults. Like, it's written in a more mature way than a lot of YA is, but it is still about young people. So you can kind of relate to them without it being, you know, like a high school book about worrying about where your locker is, like you said. So
Exactly. Yeah. And obviously, I just say this because I know that some people are going to be like, that's not all YA is. We know. We've read hundreds of YA books, and we know that there are really powerful, beautiful, silly, gorgeous, emotional stories in the YA genre. We're generalizing for sure.
Of course.
Before anyone comes at us and is like, you're being reductive. It's like, we know we're being reductive. We're just making a point. Yeah, but that's my recommendation there, Raylene.
Fantastic. And I'll kind of piggyback on that and just add another one. The Perks of Being a Wallflower is a great, great book about that's being a teenager. Bridge. Yeah, it's a perfect bridge because it is written for teens, but it's more elevated, in my opinion, and it's a little bit more mature and a little 100%. Darker. And it's just, yeah, I want more books like that. That's another recommendation that I need to ask for, is coming-of-age books that are, you know, a little more mature, because I love that. It's a good little genre.
It is.
Oh, good stuff. I feel like we kind of nailed all of those this time.
I think that this was the best we've ever done.
I think so, too. And it's like, yes, we're recommending some books we've talked about before. However, I think we really brought what we needed to this party.
Exactly.
So I hope everyone, I hope all these ladies are happy with what we have recommended today. Yeah, and just as a reminder, in our last episode, you guys may remember, we asked for our own recommendations. There should still be some time for you guys to submit your answers.
Totally. There's still another week. And if you want to find our spreadsheet, we ask for books about farms and books about fugitives. Mm-hmm. If you want to give us your recommendations for those, go to our Patreon. You do not have to be a paying subscriber to see that list, although you can join the Patreon family if you'd like to. And yeah, it's gonna be we're gonna be reading those next week, and we're pretty excited.
Mm-hmm. So submit them if you have anything. I really want books about fugitives. Please give them to me. Well, thank you everyone for listening. This has been Books Unbound with your hosts Raylene and Ariel. This episode was edited by CJ Bissett of northernsoundhouse.ca, and our community manager is Mars Grove. We are off to go record Books Unbucket, and this week I am going to ask Ariel. I just came up with this half an hour ago, so. I hope it's good. I'm going to ask Ariel which books she thinks would be turned well into video games and which video games you think would make good books. So ponder on that for about 20 seconds before we jump into the episode. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.